I had a conversation this morning with somebody that's out campaigning, running for the state legislature out on the northeast side of the city, Democrat, and she says when she's knocking on doors of people, the big issue people bring up is crime. Folks breaking in their house, beating them up, stealing their iPads, their computers, car keys, cars. They'd steal a house if they could figure out how to get the house off the foundation and drive it away with nobody seeing it. So crime is of a concern. Crime is up, despite what the mayor, who's not in the country, might want to say. Crime is up, and the IndyCan organization has come together. They remember they got together earlier this year, saying that they, you know, they wanted to, you know, create positive change. They've come together, you know, urging our city county council to bring back something that I kind of remember back in the day, but not under the name that everybody thinks is under the name. But anyway, a way to reduce violence in our streets. It's, they call it Operation Ceasefire. In the house from IndyCan is Carolyn Higginbotham, Alex Lebosky, Steve Lattimore, Angela Eubanks, and Shoshana Spector. They call their initiative Alive and Free. Guys, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So what exactly is Alive and Free? Who wants to start? What's Alive and Free?
Alive and Free is actually the strategy that we have for violence reduction.
Mm-hmm.
And just as you said, it's a program that we're bringing out for the reduction of that violence. And it's actually a cultural change,
mm-hmm.
and it's a change in policing where
right.
we're looking at going after the 5% or so of people who are actually the problem, folks who are known to have the violent tendencies where they're creating the murders and they're actually doing the shootings and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the goal is to go after those individuals.
We're not doing that now? I thought all of the surge and the zone policing and putting more police where the crimes are occurring, I thought that's what we were doing now.
That's part of the initiative that's out there now.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're not saying that we're looking to do something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
What we're looking to do is we're looking to bring the different areas into under one roof so that everyone is working together,
mm-hmm.
and they're sharing that information. And we want to make sure that it's data-driven.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's data-driven and we know that it's a proven program, we just feel like it's common sense for everyone to actually work together.
How would this work? I mean, we already got the data, and I thought the police department was data-driven. How would, in your mind, how would this concept be different? How would it work?
Well, we're looking at having a steering committee, and that steering committee would be all of the various groups coming together and then having a program manager who would coordinate it and then making that effort one that we're all working together.
We don't have that now where the men and women of law enforcement work together?
The men and women of law enforcement do an outstanding job together.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also have the community. Then we have the different organizations that are doing their own thing. And we're trying
We need better coordination and cooperation between the law enforcement agencies, the prosecutor, both the state and federal prosecutor, the probation people,
mm-hmm.
the community agencies, throughout the whole community. And we've seen in other cities where you have better coordination, better cooperation, and you adopt this strategy, we've seen in city after city a reduction, a significant reduction in homicides.
When I read your report, you all indicated that this was used here before, back in 1998. That was modeled after what the original 10-point coalition under Reverend Rivers did in Boston in the early 90s. Is that correct?
Well, it was modeled after the ceasefire strategy that was used in Boston.
Through 10-point coalition, Reverend Rivers.
Well, it was through the IMP. It was through the police department. It was before the IMPD. 10-point was part of it, but it involved the prosecutors, both the state and federal prosecutor. In fact, it involved the Justice Department.
Now, this would have been the Indianapolis Violence Reduction Partnership, which was funded by some federal grants through the Clinton administration.
Correct.
Okay. And my understanding is that the Violence Reduction Partnership was disbanded under Mayor Ballard.
I think it was actually disbanded before Mayor Ballard, but what happened when it was in existence, we saw a 45% reduction in homicides in the areas in which it was used.
Okay.
And so what we're saying is...
But it was only used, as I read, and looking at your literature, right. It was only used in two neighborhoods. It was part of then-Mayor Goldsmith had six targeted neighborhoods. Martindale, Brightwood, and Hallville were two of those targeted neighborhoods. That's what this plan was utilized in at that time with IMPD because we didn't have the merger of police and sheriff at that time.
Right, and so what we're recommending is that the program be re-implemented on a citywide basis, not simply looking at one or two neighborhoods, because one of the things that we found was that as violence was suppressed in one neighborhood, it would shift to another part of the city. And rather than focusing on neighborhoods, as the strategy has been developed over the years, the conclusion has been that there are no bad neighborhoods. There are bad actors in some of the neighborhoods, and that rather than focusing on clamping down on neighborhoods and turning them into almost a police state, if we focus on the 20 groups that drive most of the violence in the city, and that's what IMPD tells us, 20
wait, what
groups 20, drive
what,
most.
What 20 groups? We're talking about the mafia. You know, who are these 20 groups?
Well, they are networks of people. Some of them may be gangs or gang-like groups. We know some places they're drug sets. Some places they may be gangs. But IMPD says that there are approximately 20 groups in the city that drive most of the violence. And this is a group violence reduction strategy that says to the groups, we won't tolerate any more violence. Use probation to bring people into a call-in, and you say to them, if anybody in your group picks up a gun over a beef and shoots somebody, we're going to come down on the whole group.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the group members begin to police each other. The community is empowered to stand up and to say to these folks, we love you too much to allow you to keep doing this. You must stop. If you will stop, we will help you with whatever kind of social services you need, whether it's job training, housing, whatever it is that you need to get to life off the streets. We will offer that and we will support you through it. But regardless, we're not going to tolerate the violence.
I'm curious as to all the times in the last 9 years that the Indianapolis Police Department has been on this show, they've never said that there's 20 groups, Amos, that cause all the crime. Why am I suddenly hearing about this now? Why are they telling you there's 20 groups and they've never come to this community? I've never heard them tell that to Russ McQuaid at Fox 59. I've never heard them say that to Jack Reinhart on Channel 6. I've never heard them say that to the Crime Beat reporter Steve Jefferson on Channel 13. They've never said that on this program through several chiefs of police. The public safety director, who's now gone, never said that. Why all of a sudden am I hearing there's 20 groups?
Well, ceasefire is based on dealing with groups, dealing with networks of bad people,
mm-hmm.
and we ask the question.
Mm-hmm.
We said, how many groups are there in the local community driving violence?
20 groups. And they're they're not tied to particular neighborhoods, so they're scattered all over the county?
Amos, more important than just saying that there are 20 groups is that the professionals have identified those people who are behind the crime.
Okay.
And with that in mind, they can actually identify these people and go to them and actually make this strategy work. So I think that's more or less what we're saying we want to see happen.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go after the people who are actually the problem and deal with that problem.
Now, in your proposal, you're recommending that in this budget that we're supposed to be $65 million in debt on, that there be an individual hired then assemble, you know, to manage this project. Is that correct?
We're asking for a program manager, and that can be done several ways. There can actually be someone that's on the inside already that's just reallocated to that position.
Mm-hmm.
That can be a new person. We're looking to say that we need a program manager.
You're also saying a formal partnership with an organization called the National Network of Safe Communities. What is that?
The National Network for Safe Communities is obviously a national organization. It's really a peer network of communities that are working this strategy. It includes the law enforcement officials, the street outreach workers, probation officers, all of these different kinds of partners in it. And what it allows folks to do is to come together with their peers to talk about the issues that they're facing, any problems that crop up, to work that through as a group, to talk together about best practices, how to develop good standards for doing their work. And so the national network is an important part of the strategy. In fact, the research shows that no city has been able to sustain the drops in homicide without a partnership with the National Network for Safe Communities. You can get initial results, but to sustain them, cities have had to have this partnership in place.
Is the goal reducing homicides or reducing aggravated assaults?
We talk primarily about homicide, but the reality is, I mean, how do you draw the line between aggravated assault and homicide? The reality is homicide numbers, yes, they're down slightly right now because of advances in trauma care in the city. We know that the hospitals are saving more lives. Aggravated assault is up 22% this year. The reason that the homicide isn't up as much is simply that more people are surviving aggravated assault. So certainly we talk about homicide, but we're also talking about reducing aggravated assault.
Well, given that the level of homicide that I'm seeing, and I don't necessarily want to use IMPD because they call it criminal homicide. I use the database that's been very consistent in recording all homicides. Right now it's 65 year to date. This time last year it was 75. This time in 2009 it was 67. This time in 2007 it was 75. So we seem to be fluctuating at this point in the middle of August in these levels. This is not Chicago. This is not Philadelphia. This is not Baltimore in terms of the level of homicide. Why, given that aggravated assault is the crime driver in this town, why wouldn't that be the lead function and not homicide? I mean, you're asking the taxpayers to invest dollars we don't have, and they're going to say, wait a minute, how does this stop somebody that busted into my house? How does this stop, you know, where the crime really is in this town?
Well, one reason why I'm a part of IndyCan is because I'm a grieving mother. I'm a victim of a homicide. My son was shot and murdered in 2005. And for the first 3 years, my life was just devastated. After that time, I started putting all that grieving energy into advocating reducing homicides.
Okay.
And I became the starter of a group called Homicide Survivors of Indiana, victim number 2, because we are also victims. Then I became a part of IndyCan because they started faith-based organization with many churches. Many people that we had talked to, did one-on-ones with during last year, the first part of the year, that's mainly what they talked about. That's what they wanted help with. That's where they needed assistance. It's because there were so many homicides in Indianapolis, and the community cried out for help. We as members of IndyCan, we are trying to start this organization with help from the city, help from the community, to reduce homicides by 60%, which is what the organization with David Kennedy has proven through many cities.
Who is David Kennedy?
He's the executive director of the National Association of Safe Communities.
And he's had in other cities a 60% drop.
Yes.
In homicides.
In Boston.
And that's 60% drop currently, or that was back in 96?
That was in past years, but this year, Cory Booker in Newark instituted the ceasefire strategy in a district in Newark, and he saw a 48% drop in homicide. So he's expanding the ceasefire strategy into other districts within Newark. So around the country, they've seen as high as 60, they've seen 40, they've seen 30. They've seen significant drops in homicides when this program's implemented.
You're asking, as I'm reading this, in this new budget, in this $65 million deficit budget for the city and the county, funding, how much are we talking about?
We're not talking about a lot, and it depends on how the city funds it. So they could, as Steve mentions, they could reallocate somebody in city government now to make them a project manager.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're talking about is something that we think, and the evidence is, could save the city money. The published data shows that RAND Institute has studied it and said the cost of a homicide is over $8 million.
Mm-hmm.
When you do prosecution, when you do the police work, when mm-hmm. you incarceration, medical expenses, costs to the community. If we can reduce homicides, not only do we eliminate victims, but we reduce cost.
How much are you talking about?
We're not talking about a lot.
A lot is relative. You know, a lot could be $1 million. A lot could be $1.95. Sitting here with budget figures. How much are we talking about?
Clearly way under $1 million.
Okay. So if we're $65 million in the hole, okay,
mm-hmm.
Where would IndyCan, as an organization that touches neighborhoods all over the city, what area of city county services are you willing to sacrifice to move that money from those areas and services you're willing to sacrifice to achieve this? Where do I move money from?
Our concern is that violence reduction is the number one priority for our community. We've had conversations with city councilors,
mm-hmm.
With the mayor's staff, with others in the community, and there is a consensus that violence reduction is our number one priority as a community.
Would you also,
so if it's our number one priority, then we need to put our money where our mouth is.
Would you
is.
Also agree there's a consensus in this town that there is no desire to raise revenue, additional revenue, i.e. raise taxes?
But there's also a consensus. Let's make use of our government services and use them better.
And then what is then IndyCan's recommendation?
Well, just like you, we haven't seen the mayor's proposed budget for next year.
But I'm sure you've got some ideas on where we could save dollars or move dollars from.
On the project manager, we think there could be a position reallocated from elsewhere in city government to commit to a full-time project manager on this project.
Okay. But you also, as part of your recommendation, funding to support an adequate level of street outreach workers, that's dollars. That's people.
There are the crime reduction grants that is, according to the mayor, is still in the budget. That's a possibility.
I'm curious as to why, you know, and we'll open up phone lines in just a hot second, 239-1310, 239-1310, or send me an email at praiseindy.com or text message at 85620, keyword Amos. Nowhere in your proposal did I see IndyCan going to the foundation community and to the business community asking for support. You brought up Mayor Booker in Newark. And one of the things, and we've mentioned this on this program several times, and one of the things he has is a foundation where he's gone to the business community in Newark and asked the business community, hey, you want to drop crime in Newark? Give at the office. Give me the dollars needed so I can augment law enforcement in Newark and get support from Prudential and the other major employers in Newark. The only focus that I see in terms of funding this is coming from the taxpayers. We're strapped right now. So why is there no emphasis in your plan to go to the endowment, the Lilly Endowment, to go to the Central Indiana Community Foundation, to go to all the high rollers in town, the business community, and say, you don't want homicide here. You don't want violence. This is how much it's going to cost us. Step to the plate.
Amos, we'd be happy to go with the mayor or the city council.
Why can't y'all go yourself? You're the community.
We're not going to run. We're not in the business of running a program. We can't go to them and say, would you please give those folks over there money? The folks who run the program have got to be the ones who ask for the money. We can't ask for money that we aren't going to manage. And we're not asking for money for us. We are recommending that the city make this program a priority. We're mm-hmm. willing to help them get it going, to work with them as
and
strong partners.
So you're we're committed to going out to all the foundations, all the other agencies that could possibly fund this with the mayor, with the city council, with the public safety people.
So you are willing that this could be a program funded from a multiple of sources, not just from tax dollars?
Correct.
Correct.
Because
Absolutely.
As I read this, you're coming straight from tax dollars, no other funding source, and we're in an era of tight limits.
Well, Amos, I'd want to say that although it's not listed there, that doesn't mean that we haven't had conversations with private entities. However, we can't list those folks until those dollars become public. And we haven't had those commitments there. So it's not to say that we're not entertaining those opportunities, and we're not willing to actually do that.
But we need the mayor, we need the city government, we need the city council, we need public safety, we need the various agencies to come with us and say they support the program.
Let me start today with Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yes, what I don't understand is we've been having crime in all these other communities. Why, when something happened in Briar Ripple, or these rich neighborhoods or these white neighborhoods, that's when things want to get done. We've been having crime, break-ins and stuff in the community. But I seen on the news last night, now that people are over complaining, now the police things want to do stuff. What about the communities that have been having these problems? To me, it's just all backwards. The whole system is. And to me, they're trying to keep money for themselves, not to help the communities. That's all I have to say.
All right, I appreciate it. Let me go to Latasha, 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. Yes, I kind of want to have more information or who could answer the question on the group. Because are you saying there's 20 different games? Or how does that work? Or what exactly do you mean by we're going to target these groups? My follow-up question to that would be, how are you going to get the community engaged when you're going after maybe someone who has had a past? So is that what you're looking at doing? Because I don't think that would go over well, especially with organizations who are trying to get people to re-enter and be a positive citizen in this community.
All right. Who wants to respond to Sister Latasha?
Latasha, last year in March, I went to Oakland, California. There they have had reduction in homicides. One of the things that I went to, it was called a call-in. They might call it something different in different states, but a call-in is a huge meeting of the police force, all your government officials, everyone that has anything to do with public safety. Along with them, they have already interviewed and targeted, 15 young men and women each month to come in with service providers. They're talked to. They're given a chance for a brand new life. Whatever's needed, if they need jobs, if they need medical care, if they need transportation, if they need housing, all these things are provided to them. They have been targeted because they're looked at that within 6 months, they'll either be dead or they will have killed someone. These are the ones that are the highest priority of young men and women, trying to prevent them from going back to jail again or killing someone or being killed. This program had gone on in Oakland for 13 months, maybe 150 young men and women from parole or from the streets, from street workers, however they're recommended. At the end of the 13 months, out of 150 young men targeted to die, only 3 went back to prison. That's one of the pieces and one of the programs that we would like to bring to Indianapolis. Now, they have had call-ins here before. They're not on a regular basis right now. But this is part of what we're trying to do with IndyCan, is putting all the pieces together and get everybody on the same page so we can save lives.
But when they're called in, they're given a notice. They're put on notice that any more crime, if they're caught with a gun, if they're involved in a homicide, the police are coming after them, and they're coming after other members of their gang or their network or their group. So it uses the power of peer pressure within those informal or formal groups to put pressure on their other members not to commit crime because they know they're going to be prosecuted.
Alex, let me ask a question. In this is the problem when, you know, somebody gives me some statistics, I'm actually going to double check the numbers. On page 5 of your report, the sentence before the chart, it says, quote, surprisingly, criminally involved group members make up less than 5% of Indy's population, yet are responsible for the majority of homicides. There's 911,000 people in this city. 5% of 911,000 people is 45,550. Are you all telling me that there's 45,000 criminally involved group members in this city?
No.
Then where is this 5% of what?
It's really the percentage, the decimal point may be wrong on that. The number is a few groups, 20-some-odd groups, mm-hmm. and probably 1,000 or less or fewer people who are involved in those groups. It's a small number.
You talk about, you know, criminally involved group members, mm-hmm. but you can't be arrested until you overtly commit a crime.
Correct.
So, you know, I think implicit in the last call— is this a call to get people who are guilty by association without committing a crime? Because that gets very sensitive among some in my community.
No, we're certainly not talking about targeting folks who haven't committed a crime. But we know, I mean, let's face it, there's hardly a young person out there who hasn't done some stupid things. And we know that the what we're doing now is trying to arrest our way out of this problem by going into a neighborhood where there's been violence, and we go after every young person in that whole neighborhood for the little things, mm-hmm. for, you know, the light that's not working on their car or something like that, just the little tiny things. We're talking about moving away from that kind of strategy to doing very careful detective work to make sure we know exactly what the folks in these groups are in fact doing, and then saying to them, you know, we can pick you up on your parole violations because you've missed a meeting with your parole officer or something. But we know that's a small mistake. We could work with you to help rectify it if you will turn your life around. But if you don't, then in fact, these parole and probation violations we will pick you up on because we do know that we have a basis that we could throw you back in jail. But we're not trying to lock everybody up. The whole point of this is to reduce mass incarceration, to keep families together, to stop the kind of really negative impact on communities and instead empower communities, strengthen communities.
And what does this initiative, as I go to the break, don't answer this question. Think about the answer and then we'll answer it on the break. What happens if part of the strategy is to keep people on the straight and narrow and reduce them in violence, and one of the frustrations of those who want to stay on the straight and narrow is they can't find the job, what is in this proposal, because I really didn't see it here, because my eyes are getting better, what is in this proposal that will, you know, provide employment opportunities for folks and put the pressure on the business community, you know, to, you know, tell the insurance companies to cut them a break in terms of hiring ex-felons or giving somebody a second chance? I don't see any of this in here because it seems to me that also reduces violence. It's the folks with IndyCan, and IndyCan stands for Indianapolis Congregation Action Network. And they're asking for – I'm trying to get some of these dollars out of the budget so I can balance it, because according to the mayor's budget, he wants to reduce the budget for courts by 1.6%. And if the city adopted IndyCan's plan, they're going to, you know, have more people going through the courts, and we'd have to have more money. Also, I heard the mayor don't like this idea anyway. Anyway, we'll talk about all of that. It'll take more of your calls at 239-1310, 239-1310, or your emails at praiseindy.com or your text messages at 85620, keyword Amos. It's Afternoons with Amos for a Tuesday. 239-1310, 239-1310, it's Afternoons with Amos. Where does employment and trying to provide an economic counterweight to crime fit in this plan?
Okay, I want to first say that we're all on the same page. When I say we're all on the same page, I want to say that the mayor, the prosecutor, the community leaders, the outreach workers, we all realize that violence reduction is something that has to be a priority for mm-hmm. us as a city. Mm-hmm. And as you can possibly remember back, one of our tenets as far as the IndyCan program is career pipeline. Mm-hmm. The career pipeline fits right into this. We realize that if we create a career pipeline and we can actually take people from that filling out the application or going into a training program to actual employment, that'll also reduce the violence and it'll help the city out as a whole. Mm-hmm. That's something that we already have in place that we're working on. And again, the mayor, the city council, all of these people, they all agree that this is something that we have to do. So that's part of the program. It's just not listed right there as far as your notes.
And Amos, if I might add, part of that whole issue with employment is we understand the problem that folks, particularly felony convictions, have with getting jobs, with that box on the job application that says, have you ever been convicted of a felony? And 30 years later, you know, we've got employers who simply throw out the applications because they see that checked. We're certainly concerned about that and trying to get as much change on that as we can to get that off the job application so that folks are only restricted from jobs where a particular felony connects to that job. Like, obviously, we're not going to have sex offenders working in our schools, but where folks who have other kinds of crimes, that we can get them into employment. And I know we are a faith-based organization. We're congregationally based. My congregation, Central Christian Church, sat down with Bob Oseley. And had a conversation with him about this issue and more broadly about reentry. So we are certainly concerned about this and working on multiple fronts.
This is why we need the project manager to coordinate all the activities so we get the police, the prosecutor, the probation people working with the community agencies in terms of employment, and we all have
why
it all
isn't
coordinated.
That the public safety director?
Well, you got,
why isn't that a job description for the public safety director of Indianapolis and Marion County?
I think there's more focused energy. The public safety director has to look at some other issues like the fire department and other things, so that I think to add it on to an existing job is probably too much.
But a project manager is a functionary, you know, trying to deal with big bureaucracies, and those people can slough him. You're just a project man. I don't have to listen to you.
But this is why we also are looking at having the steering committee. Because with the steering committee, you have those people who are the leaders of the various areas, such as the public safety director, the chief of police, even having the mayor's group behind the scene. Then you don't have that type of an issue because we have the leaders of the city saying that this is what they're behind.
239-1310, tell me, go to the phones. And Larry, hi there.
How you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
I would like to catch them in a committee hearing because they are down there. I went to a committee hearing last night. Everybody in the room was begging for money. These people are, if they were so concerned, they need to get another job and maybe two jobs so they can support their own pipe dreams. Just because something works in Philadelphia or Boston, where the variables are considerably worse than here in Indianapolis, they can't promise anybody a 50% reduction in town. Last night, one of the puff men were in there talking about you plant a tree in your yard, you cut your electric bill in half. I say, well, you just plant two trees, you can eliminate your electric bill. But these people are desperate, and they're surely desperate. Maybe they've been to college and have student loans to pay off. They have public safety here in this town, and the disturbing thing I've seen, Amos, is two police cars parked alongside of the road, not able to go until another police car came to give them a jump so they can continue on their way. We don't have the money, and I would just like to catch them in a hearing. When do you have your hearing?
Hello? The hearing for the proposal?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Is when if you want this in this year's budget?
We're going to go and testify in front of the Public Safety Committee of the City Council.
Is that
next
meeting
week.
This week or next week?
Next week on the 29th.
Okay.
I'd sure like to see you there because what you're doing is you're just trying to fat back on crime.
We're not asking for any money for
anything. On dead bodies.
Wait, hold on. All right, 239-1310, 239-1310. Let me go back to the phone. We got an email. How can this organization assist with stopping the import of illegal drugs into high crime-driven neighborhoods? How can this organization assist with the white-collar criminals who finance the illegal drug trafficking? Isn't that another contributor to the violence?
Look, Amos, what we're talking about is a program that we know has worked here before. It worked here in the late 1990s. It has worked not just in cities on the East and West Coast, but it's currently working very effectively in Cincinnati, a city that is not so very different from Indianapolis. We know that Prosecutor Curry has told us face-to-face in multiple meetings that this is a strategy that he believes in. It's a strategy that our police command staff believes in. Everyone agrees that it works. The issue is simply putting the infrastructure in place to make the most effective and efficient use of the programs that we are currently doing so that we can achieve the kinds of results we had in the 1990s and sustain them over time. We have too many people who are being killed in our neighborhoods, too many young men and young women. The basketball star from Vincennes who died in that shootout in Ben Davis Park. We need to bring an end to these deaths. It's about saving lives, about the moral imperative that we have as a faith community to say life is sacred. We need to do what we know works to save lives.
Let me go back to the shooting out by Ben Davis. That wasn't by the so-called 20 groups. And I'm getting text messages and emails reacting to that statement, and I realize this is supposedly from IMPD. So y'all need to tell IMPD, whoever told that to you, you need to tell them that I said, whoever told that to you, they need to come on this program and they need to tell that same thing to the community, because I'm getting pushback from my audience. Give an example, text message. Yeah, right, 20 groups. Does that include child molesters, kids that go in schools and movie theaters and kill grown men on the South Side who are using the N-word? Does that 20, another email at praiseindy.com, does that 20 include the Ku Klux Klan or racial hate groups? To my knowledge, that group or gang has never been arrested, tracked, or targeted. That group involved in that heinous tragedy out by Ben Davis, that wasn't one of the 20 groups. So, yeah, I've got an audience that's reacting to what you're saying coming from IMPD. IMPD should man up and come and tell this community exactly what they told you, because it's not coming across too well and it's not necessarily helping you all given the tenor that I'm hearing. Let me go back to the phones and Greg. Hi, Greg.
How you doing, Damon?
I'm fine.
I'm going to ask these people a question.
Okay.
When you see all of that money that the mayor gave to his staff, what do y'all think about that? And do y'all think some of that money should have came y'all way?
Greg's asking, when you saw the salary increases the mayor gave to his staff, should that be some of the money that should be coming your way?
We're not in the position of saying how the mayor and the city council implement a program. We are recommending that this is the proven strategy. It's worked in city after city, in city after city. The research shows that it's less than 5% of the population, a very small number of groups, 5% of the population of the violence-plagued neighborhoods that are actually involved in this. It was true in Boston, in Cincinnati, in Oakland, California, Baltimore, in city after city. The research is consistent.
But with all due respect, You at the meeting the other night, you had the president of the city county council, you had my good friend Councilor Feaster up there, and you guys were pressing them. And this is the feedback that I got from people who were at the meeting, that you all were pressing them to support this without giving them any cover in terms of where dollars would come from, what services we could sacrifice. Let's say we all agree that this should be a top 5 priority of this city. Fine. And let's say for the sake of the argument, it costs $500,000 to do. Cool. As I've said on this program the last several weeks, and I've been very consistent about this, we're in an era of limits in this city. We cannot raise, as much as I would like to raise revenue and would like to implement a tax increase that is politically unacceptable across all most neighborhoods. So given that reality, where do we find $500,000 that can be cut from an existing budget or budgets to pay for something that's needed? And with all due respect, for any organization to not say where you all think that money could come from is disingenuous. If you feel that strongly in this proposal, it seems, if I felt strongly in a proposal, I would tell this audience exactly where the money ought to come from. I'd say, Mayor, roll back your salary increases, roll your salary back, roll the salary back of all the city department heads 10%. Let's pool that money and deal with this. That's a solution. That's an idea. That's something you put on the table and we can discuss it. But I don't hear that for you all to say, well, that ain't up to me. Yes, it is. Y'all bringing the idea.
We're bringing the idea.
Then why? I get that. Then why not bring ideas of how we pay for it?
Those ideas are there. However, we have to have the right people in the room and have that discussion.
But you all can't make that suggestion?
Yes, we can make that suggestion.
Well, why aren't you?
But to sit right here on the radio and tell people that we want the mayor to cut his personal salary, that's not going to get us any place. But what we want to do is we want to sit down with the city council.
But you have – anyway, let me hold on there. Let me go to Sharon at 239-1310. Hey. Hi, Sharon.
Hey, Amos. Let me give you the hard truth of the matter.
Okay.
We're going to talk to somebody because I've lived the life.
Yes, ma'am.
This life that you're talking about.
Okay.
First of all, what you're doing is you're racial profiling. You're profiling 20 sets of people that you feel that are potential dangers, or but you can't do that. If that's the case, you're pulling over everybody in certain 20 different neighborhoods. Hot spots is what you're going to do. But the problem is the people that you're targeting, they don't have jobs. A lot of these people want to work. A lot of these people have already been convicted of crimes. When they go to apply for jobs, nobody wants to hire them. They've already got families established. So how are they supposed to eat? How are they supposed to provide for themselves? Everybody in this industry don't want to continue to live that life. People want to get out of the streets. They know that it's death. They know that it's danger. They understand the whole concept of the life that they're living. But nobody's helping to provide the jobs or any type of means of getting them or even helping them, even with the reentry program. You don't even help to get these people out of the street. My child's father's been out for 2 years, and he has yet to land a job. But guess what? He's supposed to pay child support. He can't pay child support if he don't have any money. So it's a cycle. It's a vicious cycle. And nobody's actually coming up with any ideas to help these people get on their feet and get out of the street. Now, come up with an answer for that. Don't target nobody. Help them. If you want to help them, give them, teach them how to fish so they can feed themselves. And you guys have a great day.
All right. I want to respond to that if I can.
Mm-hmm.
I feel you 100%. And these are the type of conversations that we have had over thousands of times. This is exactly what we're talking about. The atmosphere right now the way we feel in our neighborhood is that we are being profiled. But we're saying that we know even in our neighborhood who those folks are that are causing problems. I give you an example. My mother knows that two doors down from her is the guy who actually is breaking into the houses. She knows. But who can she tell? Who can she feel confident in communicating that with? This is what we're talking about. We're talking about creating a program that actually brings everybody together as partners so that we can actually deal with it. We know who the problem people are in the community. So, but if we can actually take those people and talk to them and give them real opportunity, even when you say that someone being able to pay their child support, we're talking about real solutions here. We're not talking about some, as it was said, a pipe dream. We're talking about actually making it happen. We're asking for these partnerships, and that is where we are as IndyCamp.
Back to the phones, and B, hi there.
Okay, I understand everything you're saying, and that young lady is talking about she's a grieving mother. I'm a grieving aunt with family members then being killed. We told the police who they were, was nothing done. Now, my question for the group, you want us to support you. Have you been to the community? I'm not talking about the mayor's office and the higher-up. I'm talking the ones that live in Hallville in the communities, because I haven't never heard of you before.
Yes, we have been. In fact, our church is in Hallville. And we have been very big advocates on trying to help young men get jobs coming right out of prison. There is an office there. There is churches and people who are trying to do everything that you're talking about.
Okay, could you give me the name, church's names or something?
Yes, Westside Community Ministries. They have an office. Right now, today, it was talked about in church on Sunday. There is a huge job going on right now with the railroad. They're hiring.
But IndyCan does not represent just one church, but we have over 20 congregations in town that are participating, and we're adding congregations.
Okay, but everybody don't go to church.
Hold on. Yeah, go ahead.
And also, there is, I'll give you a short story of someone in my church, a young man who maybe 10 years ago was caught a felony because of a party where they had marijuana in the room. And since he had rented the room, he was charged with the felony. Now, here 10 years later, he's raised a daughter. He cannot get a job. He cannot get food stamps because it was drug related. Mm-hmm. He cannot get an apartment or a place to live because he has a felony. So we talk to these people. We interview them. They come to our meetings. They're part of our group because we're all working for the same thing. The reentry programs, the jobs, everything that you're talking about is what we are doing and what we're trying to do. We're trying very hard to get that box off the application that says, do you have a felony?
Okay, I understand that. But what do you do for those who don't go to church? How do you reach them?
Well, in the call-ins are where we want to work with the police, the prosecutor, the community, call in people from the community, and the ceasefire program would coordinate social service activities and give the people one phone number they can contact these services, and whether it's employment, whether it's housing or what have you, a single contact, and we want to organize it in a much more functional, effective basis.
All right, I don't know whether that answered the question. Let me I understand this program has been in Baltimore. Is that correct? Or it's been in Boston?
It's been in Boston.
Okay, and how many people staffed it in Boston?
In Boston, they like what we're proposing here. It's using the existing police, existing probation, existing services. What you're doing is adding some infrastructure on top with a project manager, and
who then is responsible for going out into neighborhoods, going out in the community, and explaining all of this? In getting the community and getting the city behind this?
Well, part of this, you're looking at the mayor's office with the community outreach, and then you're talking about IndyCan, the things that we're doing with the congregations and the actual actions that we have. That's how we're trying to get this information out, even with coming here on your show.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to get that information out so that people will know. And as we have meetings, they can always go to IndyCan.org.
And then the outreach workers we talk about as part of this program going out to the community.
How many outreach workers in a Boston?
In Boston, that I don't know.
I'm trying to get a sense of putting my hands around this program, because when this program was here, this Operation Crossroads was here in 98. Mm-hmm. This was only IMPD area. So that was an area of 320,000 people. The sheriff wasn't involved in this. Now you're talking about a county of 911,000, where crime is everywhere, where violence is everywhere. And I don't see, all I hear is project manager and outreach workers. How many to cover a city this big? I'd want to know. Boston is less than two-thirds the size of Indianapolis. So that's why I'm asking, how many outreach workers in Boston? So if there's 20 outreach workers in Boston, and Boston is two-thirds our size, you raise that by a third, it'd probably need to be 30 outreach workers.
What we need to do is look at the crime statistics. We need to talk to the IMPD officers out on the streets, identify who are in these gangs, where the gangs are, where these groups are located, how they interact, and then we can make an estimate of how many.
But you understand, I got a lot of listeners that are skeptical over this, especially in a town where the police have been reluctant to talk about gangs.
Well, and I think one of the reasons that's true in a lot of cities, the resistance to say gangs, because you've got gangs, you've got networks, you've got sets. People argue over the terminology. The point is it's group driven. And that's true in city after city. One of the reasons we need the National Network for Safe Communities is to help us figure out these details, like exactly how many street outreach workers you actually need how many you'd like to have in the best of all possible worlds. And also point out that we worked with the city on a Department of Justice grant.
Mm-hmm.
We helped them identify and apply for a grant that, if we do receive it, would provide funding for street outreach workers. So that if that grant comes through, and obviously there are a lot of cities that have applied, but if it comes through, it's $1.5 million over 3 years,
mm-hmm.
which would cover the cost of additional street outreach workers as well as social service components.
Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi. You've asked a lot of the questions that I had, Amos, because you're so smart. But the one thing I don't understand about this group is, why do we need you? We have parents. We have churches. We can go to the police on our own. We have small groups of people that say they have jobs out there for us. The main thing I hear you talking about is getting a grant. And when they ask you, what can you do, you always say, well, I got to go to this person or that person. And you don't sound like you're very efficient. And also, it seems to me that your percentages change every 5 minutes. First, it was 60%. Then it was 20%. I just don't feel very comfortable with you. You don't seem organized. You don't have any monies. You don't have any references. And I'm not being dismissive of you, but you just don't sound credible to me. Thank you very much.
All right, let me go to David at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, I'm not really sure who I'm talking to when I give this comment, but there was some lady that called and said that there needs to be some programs to help felons when they get out of prison.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say that there is a program that's funded by taxpayers. It's called high school. High school diploma is what we provide as taxpayers as a program to prevent you from getting in a situation where you need to commit a felon and getting in the prison. We pay for that as well. And then when we get out, we still got to pay extra dollars to help you get back on track. We provide you with an education. We provide your kids that you don't want to take care of with Section 8 housing, food stamps.
Oh, David. So you're telling me that the only criminals that exist are those without a high school diploma. If you get a high school diploma, you're not going to commit a criminal act.
Yeah, but that puts you in a better position to get a job and not be a felon. All I'm saying is, if we erase felon from the box of application in that checkbox, then that doesn't separate those who work hard to not become a felon and those who work hard to get a high school diploma. There has to be some kind of separation for those who understand what's valuable later in life. Those who don't, you have to get in line and wait till a position becomes available. If the job should be available to those who understand high school diploma, stay out of trouble. We can't keep going to the taxpayers to help people when we provided them two opportunities. Getting in prison, you're supposed to be able to be reevaluated and come out ready to survive in society. But that can be avoided if they take the free education that taxpayers willingly buy houses and pay property taxes for to provide you. We can't keep taking care of people all the way through their lives.
All right, David, good points. Let me go to Reginald. Hi there.
Hello. Hi,
you're on the air. Yes, sir, you're on the air.
Yeah, it seems like to me that you have an attitude towards the whole organization. It's not their job to find that money or to find the cuts. It's a job to get the money and then the city county council finds where to get the money from.
Not necessarily, sir. And this is where we will agree to disagree. Any group that is going to come forward and say we need to spend money out of the taxpayers' pocket, and the city is broke, $65 million in deficit, needs to come and say, what are you willing to not have in terms of services? The problem comes in when all of us who are taxpayers, we say we don't want to raise taxes, so we're not going to raise revenue. Okay, that's cool. We know there's a deficit. This is not the federal government, so the budget must be balanced by law. And if you've been listening to this program, you know that I've thrown out, what are we as a city willing to give up? What are we willing to keep as services? And my challenge to any organization, doesn't matter whether it's IndyCan here today or Joe Blow, if you got a bright idea of how we ought to spend our tax money in this budget discussion, that's cool. Tell me what you're willing to get rid of to do this. If this were a business or if this was your house and your children came and said, Daddy, I think we ought to get a brand new fancy TV for the living room. And you say, okay, kids, what are you willing to give up? Because I only can take in so much money in order to have that luxury or to have that necessity. If you're on a tight budget, you're going to sacrifice something to get something else. That's all my point.
Okay, this is a program that's known to work.
Hold it. Wait a minute. I still have not seen the proof that it is proven to work. Because it worked here more than 10 years ago. In only two neighborhoods. I'm looking forward to talking to this guy with the National Network of Safe Communities. I'm sure that Shoshana is going to arrange that interview where I can hear and the community can hear for themselves. Where has it worked? Remember, I'm the statistics geek in this community and on this program. Just because somebody says it works, I want to see the results for myself. So just don't tell me it went down 60% back
well,
in.
Well, they got proof. I'm sure they can show you, Mr. Brown.
Well, I don't. I'm still looking for it, but well, I don't care. Hold it. But wait a minute. It's 2012. I don't care right now about 1996. I care about where are these programs now in 2012, 2011, 2010. Show me the city. Show me where this is working right now. In this environment, in 2012, 2011, 2010 environment. I don't care what happened when Steve Goldsmith was here. That's ancient history now.
Well, where it's happening right now, Newark.
All right, get me somebody on from Newark that we can talk to him. Get me somebody from Newark that we can talk to him.
It's working in Cincinnati. Get me
someone in the Natty, and I'll call my colleague at the Buzz in Cincinnati and ask about it.
I don't have a problem with that. I want to add the fact that our professionals here, our public safety, our prosecution team, everyone that we've talked to says that this strategy is a strategy that's proven and that they're all in support of it. Therefore, why would we not do something that seems to be common
sense?
Then
they need to come to this community and tell them that. As well as whoever told you at IMPD that there's the 20 groups, IMPD needs to say that. If they feel that strongly about it, they need to come to this community and tell them. Because I got a lot of people that are listening right now that have some reservations about all of this. Okay? Is that fair?
That's fair.
I think we all have the same solution. I'm just simply saying we're broke as a city. We're broke. All right. I have an idea how we can save the money and get you your dollars. I'm trying to get you your dollars.
Give us that idea that you have.
You didn't like it before because I said the mayor ought to roll his doggone salaries back.
Okay.
There needs to be a freeze on travel. If they froze every travel that needed to be done by city and county workers, if they want to travel to a convention, pay for it out of their own pocket, I think that could free up a whole lot of money right there.
Go back to your other comment about getting evidence of this works. Mm-hmm. We're going to try and follow up with you mm-hmm. and try and get telephone contacts that you can talk to in these other cities where they've worked with ceasefire and it's worked.
And let them tell the community. It's not about talking to me. It's talking to the community. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay.
So we will try to make arrangements for that.
All right. And the report, Alive and Free, is on your website. And the website is?
www.indycan.org.
All right, so www.indycan.org. And I have to ask for all of my listeners that are not on the internet, is there a phone number where they can have more information? Because, you know, some folk ain't internet ready. They like to be old-fashioned Bell telephone ready. So is there? I'm sure people want more information. They're gonna email me. Is somebody gonna email me and get me a number here?
We'll email you a number.
They're gonna email me a number. All right, Shoshana Spector, Angela Eubank, Steve Lattimore, Alex Slabowski, and Carolyn Higginbotham. Guys, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.